This is the Next Bite of Life podcast, the place to be to hear personal stories from expats, digital nomads, and everybody else taking their next bite of life. Thank you for joining me on this episode of the Next Bite of Life podcast and videocast. Today, my guest is Tim Leffel, and he is an author, a publisher, an editor. He does it all, and he's talking to us from Mexico. How are you today, Tim?
Good. Things are nice here. It's sunny and beautiful, so it's a good day.
Oh, we're so jealous over here because unfortunately for us, it's been really cold. But hey, you know, we take it, we can't have it all sunny all the time. Now, Tim, please tell us exactly where in Mexico you're at.
So I'm in a city called Guanajuato, which is a kind of a mouthful, but it's kind of an old indigenous word that the Spanish, you know, put their own spin on. But I'm about 4 hours north of Mexico City and about an hour and a half from a city called San Miguel de Allende, which is a big retirement center for Americans and Canadians. So more people know about that one. But I'm in the same state and also another UNESCO World Heritage City, so a lot of history here. And it's very walkable. There's more pedestrian streets than ones with cars on them, so I like that a lot.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. And is it one of those colorful places where the houses are all different colors?
Yeah, a lot of that. And they sort of spill down the hillsides, and so it's pretty.
Nice. Now, there's a place I've never been to. I've been to Mexico City and Puerto Vallarta, Nueva Vallarta, Taxco, Cuernavaca, but I've never been around there. So I guess there's still, you know, plenty of places for me to discover, I guess. How long have you been living in Mexico?
So I've been here on and off for about 10 years, but I had a daughter who was in school, and so that makes things kind of complicated. So we were going back and forth between Tampa Bay, Florida, and here, and we went back for 3 years at the end for her to finish high school in the U.S. and get a, you know, U.S. diploma. We could talk about this more. I'm sure it's come up on your show before. I think elementary school doesn't matter too much where you are, but then the further up you get, the more standardized testing you have and all that stuff. So anyway, but she did go to school here for 3 years in Spanish. So her Spanish is a lot better than mine.
That's great. I was just going to say, so she must be really fluent, which is fantastic. Have you been keeping up with the Spanish? Has it been really hard for you? I know I have a hard time.
Well, it's been tougher during this pandemic because, you know, I work from home anyway, and and we've been holed up even more, you know, trying to be safe. So I haven't been out interacting as much as I would normally. And I feel like I'm kind of at a plateau. And so I actually just downloaded some books the other day that are more reading kind of things, to short stories in Spanish, you know, that kind of thing. So I can at least try to passively absorb some more.
But here's the important question. Can you order beer
and margaritas? Yeah. I could get by. I mean, all the basics, you know, the traveler kind of Spanish I can do fine with. It's just when it gets into more intense discussions, I get lost.
Yeah, I understand that because I'm having the same problem. But, you know, poco a poco, like they say, right?
Right.
So now, Tim, tell me, you've been there off and on for 10 years. Before that, you were also, you know, I call this experimental expatting. That's what I sort of call these things, where you try different places. And I know before that, you were living in Turkey, right? One of the places that you lived in?
Yeah, when I was younger, we went backpacking around the world for 3 times, actually.
Oh, circled the globe.
And part of that was we taught English. We did it in Istanbul, Turkey, and a suburb of Seoul, Korea. Very different experiences and very different students. But I really enjoyed that life of actually living somewhere instead of passing through. And so we kind of took a break from long-term travel when we had a child. But we kept thinking in the back of our mind, you know, we wanted to get back to that again at some point. So I think when she was 10, we moved to Mexico the first time for a year. And so, I mean, we didn't want to go to the other side of the world again, because I think that makes things difficult from time zones and seeing your family and all of that. So we kind of stayed fairly close. But you know, once we can all start moving around again, we're hoping, my wife and I are hoping to do more of that, go just live somewhere for 2 or 3 months, you know, and then go to go to the next place and use this as our base still, but not be stuck here all
exactly.
the time.
Yeah. It's been really hard. A lot of people, especially travelers and expats, and, you know, they're used to travel and they want to travel, and all of a sudden you can't do it. And, you know, it's like, just because you can't do it makes you want to do it more. That's what I've been finding people are saying, you know, but I've been like, okay, that's it. We can't travel. That's it. I think we had such a hard time trying to get back to Spain after being in Italy when it hit that, you know, it just cured me for a little bit. I'm like, I'm okay with that because I don't want to get stuck again. It was just too stressful.
Yeah,
but how is life
nightmare.
There now?
Well, unfortunately, I think the situation in Mexico is very similar to the U.S. and for a lot of the same reasons, just not very good leadership at the top and kind of a muddled message there for a while. And, you know, the president was going around hugging people like a month after this all happened, after it all started, you know.
Oh,
so that doesn't send a very good signal.
Exactly.
But, you know, fortunately, a lot of the mayors and governors were much more adamant about putting things in place. But yeah, it's a tough situation here because I feel like almost everyone's wearing a mask now and being careful finally.
Yeah.
But you've got people living in very close quarters in a lot of cases. And a lot of people, you know, kind of live that underground economy life where they run a taco stand or a gordita stand or something, or you know, they walk the streets delivering things. And so it's hard to really make people lock down without just completely killing the economy. And so they're trying to walk that fine line. And unfortunately, this thing's so contagious that it's not working very well.
Yeah, ugh, that sucks. But I think this is probably where we're at for the next. Everybody was saying, you know, hopefully 2021 will be better. But I think it's just going to be more of the same for a while. It's unprecedented. So, you know, what are you going to do now?
Just gotta hope the jabs and the arm work, and
yeah,
you know, get out there in big quantities.
Yes, maybe that'll help. Now, Tim, let's talk about, I know for anybody listening or watching the show, if you're a traveler or you're hoping to move to someplace else, more than likely you've come in contact with Tim's book, and it's called A Better Life for Half the Price. Now, tell us about that book a little bit and how it came to be and everything that you can, you know, just sort of share with us.
Yeah, sure. I'll hold it up here. This is the second edition, and it's a pretty thick one. So if it doesn't answer your questions after all that, then maybe I can't help you out.
I know, really.
But yeah, it's not that price has changed all that much, but the old one was 5 or 6 years old, and you know, people start looking at the copyright date and assuming it's all out of date. But fortunately, most of the countries that are highlighted in here, and there's 19 of them, prices are pretty similar to where they were 5 or 6 years ago, partly just because the dollar has stayed strong or even gone up in some places. Your neighbor Portugal is a little more expensive just because it's gotten so popular. And lots of Brits have moved there and bought real estate.
Yes.
Kind of drives
up prices.
And
they've pushed everybody out. You know?
And Thailand's currency has gotten stronger for some reason, so that one's a little more expensive. But most of the others are pretty similar. But anyway, I did make a few country changes. And the good thing this time around is because everybody was locked up at home and sheltered at home, I was able to interview people pretty easily. It was pretty easy to get hold of people. So I think I interviewed about 80 expats this time around on the phone or by email. And so I got to really get the inside scoop from a lot of people living in places that I had not been to lately or certainly hadn't lived in. So it was good to get that perspective. But basically, it's rundowns of specific countries, but then the whole first third or so is about trying to answer questions about the process and choosing your right, you know, your perfect location and what you have to take care of before you leave, all the nitty gritty kind of stuff. And also I'm trying to discourage people that this is not right for, because it's not the right thing for everybody to do. And
I'm so glad you mentioned that because, you know, I know I always tell people you need to do your due diligence before you start taking off and do this. There are things for sure that you definitely need to cross off your list. And, you know, to have a little bit of guidance is definitely helpful. It's a small investment because when you think about it, once you get over there, it's not that easy to just say, hey, I mean, yeah, you can always come back home. But if you do your, you know, your homework, let's say, before you leave, then it's a lot easier to assimilate into the country that you're going to. So it's nice that this book helps people. Now, of all the countries in, you know, where people are staying, what do you think the country is that has the lowest cost of living, actually? Like, can you disclose that? You don't have to, but if you can, it would be great.
That's fine. There's kind of a leader in each area of the world. I think probably in Central America, it's Nicaragua. And in South America, it's Bolivia, but not many people move there. So let's say Ecuador.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Because
Ecuador also has a really low income requirement for you to get permanent residency. It's these days, it's around $400 for a single person and $600 for a couple, which not that you can really live on that, but that's their minimum to get residency. So it's very easy. And then in Europe, where you are, I would say it's probably either Bulgaria or Albania. And Albania is kind of an interesting one because if you're an American, you can stay for a year on a tourist visa. So a lot of those European countries, you have to leave the whole zone after 3 months, the whole Schengen zone. So Albania, you can stay a while. Bulgaria, you can't. But yeah, it's a bargain there. And then in Asia, it's probably Cambodia, just in terms of
your
cost of living. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of this is just related to what the average wage is in the country, you know, what the wealth is in the country. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's the best value. So, you know, people need to look beyond that and say, well, it's the cheapest, but I don't want to live there for one reason or another. And I mean, if you go to stay in Southeast Asia and you go to Malaysia instead, for instance, it's an incredible value there for what you get for your money in terms of renting an apartment. I mean, you can get beautiful 3 or 4 bedroom modern place for $600 or $800 a month. So for a lot of people, you know, that outweighs maybe how much they have to spend to go out to eat. And not that it's expensive, but maybe it's a little more than Cambodia. But you know, you get such a great value in your rent expense that that outweighs a lot of other things.
Exactly. And the cost of eating out and everything is pretty cheap in those places.
Yeah.
But I think if you, you know, if you find out what you're willing to live without, then it makes it easy to you can narrow down what countries you can go to. And then of course, you know, the money and think about that and see what kind of fits the whole package.
Right. Plus, there's a lot of low-hanging fruit, especially for from the U.S. I mean, your rent's going to go down by half or more, probably. But healthcare is a huge one, too. I mean, Americans pay a fortune for healthcare, and most of them don't realize that the rest of the world does not operate that way.
And they don't want to. What's amazing to me is like they don't want to even consider that there are better ways to do it. This is what makes me really upset, I guess. You know, they hear, you can move to another country and pay low. No. We do it the best way here, obviously, you know. So there's no way. What are you going to get for that? You know, a toenail thing, you know. But hey. You know, you're proof that it's doable. I'm proof that it's doable. And a lot of people are doing it. Now, let's go back a little bit to where you were in Florida. I know I sort of read up on some things. And I know you were saying, like, the cost of living for you was, like, $3,000 a month. Sometimes, like, you know, when you count everything. So compared to now.
Usually.
Yeah.
Yeah, our rent was $2,100 a month when we lived in Tampa. And, you know, it was a nice place and a good school district, but it wasn't anything luxurious, that's for sure.
Yeah.
and that's just the U.S. I mean, we were in a mid-sized city. If you live in San Francisco or New York, you're going to pay far more than that.
Uh-huh.
for a studio.
Yes.
So we had a 3-bedroom place, you know, and it was, you know, it was nice. It was near downtown. But and then you add all the other things on top, you know, I'm self-employed, so health insurance is a fortune. Yeah. Start off with that. Then we had a car and car insurance and utilities and everything else. So yeah, it can add up to a few grand every month you even start having any fun.
And how stressful is that, you know, especially when you're self-employed and you've got to like manage your money, right? How stressful is it on your marriage, on your kids? I mean, it's like, it's worrying. And it's like, you know, you have years and years and years of that. It doesn't make for a very good, you know, way to live, right? You know?
Yeah, it adds a lot of stress to your life and tension in your family. And it's also frustrating, I think, to know that you've got to hit $4,000 a month, let's just say, before your expenses are covered, you know? And so you got to get to that point just to cover things. And then you can start thinking about all the extras.
Jeez. So like when you know, what made you start thinking, was it because you had traveled before to like Korea and you had lived in Istanbul? Did that make you think, maybe we should start thinking about moving somewhere else? What was that nail in the coffin? Like, what was the, like, what led to the ultimate thing?
Well, it was in the back of our mind all the time. And we had talked about it, you know, once our daughter was old enough that we could take off. And so it wasn't even the financial thing. That was not the main motivation. It was more just to live in another culture. But then we had traveled around Mexico, and we actually used to have a little beach house that we just kind of bought as a getaway place. Because at the time we lived in Nashville, Tennessee, which is landlocked in the middle of the country. So we had traveled around Mexico a bit already, but only on vacation and, you know, getaways. But I knew how cheap it was there and how cheaply we could live. And then when we sort of did a trial run in Guanajuato, which I would strongly recommend anybody to do, we came for a month, lived in a neighborhood and rented an apartment and, you know, bought groceries, went to the butcher shop, went to the bakery, all that kind of stuff just to get a feel. So I knew what we could live for and how cheap it could be compared to the US. So then the financial factor started coming in too as another motivator. But really it was just to live in a different culture and give our daughter that experience too. I mean, I don't know if she fully appreciates it yet, but she already has found out that having a second language on your resume can definitely get you a closer look when you're applying for jobs.
Exactly. What a leg up. I mean, you know, she's got one of the main languages to learn. I mean,
it's very useful.
You got English and you got Spanish under your belt. You're pretty much covered like over 3/4 of the world. So the world is hers, you know, that's fantastic. Now, can you quantify the cost of living like a month for you, for three people? So a couple and a kid?
Yeah, I always just say rule of thumb is what we spend on rent in the U.S. is what we spend on everything here. Wow. That's when there's three of us.
Yeah.
When my daughter's not here, she's been living with us for a while, but she's going back next month. When she's not here, it goes down, of course, when it's just two people. And then we probably get by for $1,500 or so a month. And we're not being careful. I want to emphasize that that's not being frugal. That's, you know, going out to eat and having fun and going to the symphony and concerts, which, of course, a lot of that stuff went on hold for a while. Yeah. So there was a point during the pandemic, I think we were spending $700 or $800 a month.
Where can I put this money? Where can I throw it? What else can I buy? Right?
But I gotta put a caveat in there, though, that we own our house here free and clear, which is pretty much the only way you can buy a house in a lot of these countries. You have to sort of buy it outright because there's not much of a mortgage.
No such thing.
So if we wanted to rent a house that was like ours, we would pay about $800 a month for rent.
Okay.
Still, I think we could probably still get by for $1,500 or $1,600 a month, you know, for two of us, because the rest of the expenses are so low. I mean, our electric bill is literally about $10 a month. The water bill is about the same. So utilities are not much. Actually, when we've rented out our house to people long term, we've rented it for $800 a month. And that includes utilities. That includes a housekeeper. And so, you know, that's pretty deep. That's pretty normal for a, let's say, a 2 or 3 bedroom place. You can rent a 1 bedroom here for $500 really easily, wow. sometimes less. There's a university in my city, so that always brings down the cost of housing because students can't afford but so much. So
exactly. So they got to buddy up.
Yeah. And those prices are pretty similar across central Mexico, not in Mexico City, and maybe not in San Miguel de Allende because it's a pretty popular place, but almost anywhere else in the interior of Mexico away from the beach, that's a pretty normal range for rental prices.
That's great. It sounds, you know, very reasonable. And it's one of the reasons why Mexico is so popular with people. It's close to the U.S. And, you know, you can, I mean, really, for the price of a margarita at a restaurant in the U.S., you could pay your light bill. I mean, it doesn't go much better than that. It's fantastic. Now, for the listeners, you know, who think like everybody in Mexico is retired and they're, you know, all day long you sit by the fire and whatever, you know, you want to make it clear that you're still working and you still have an income coming in, right?
Yeah, I am. And on that point, internet access has gotten a lot faster here from when I first moved. So that's a good point. Now you can get fiber optic to the home quite fast. So that's good. But yeah, there's a lot of people still working in Mexico. And this past year, a lot more digital nomads have moved here because you can get 6 months on a tourist visa in Mexico.
Wow, and then I didn't know it was six months. Wow.
Yeah, and then you just have to leave and come back. So a lot of those digital nomads that were bopping around the world or living in Thailand or Bali or wherever and had to find a new place ended up coming here. And a lot of them around Puerto Vallarta or Playa del Carmen, you know, the beach areas, but a fair number have moved to Merida and Mexico City and other places too. Because the costs are good, the weather's nice, and it's easy to get where you need to go, not just back to the U.S., but there's pretty good flight choices from Cancun and from Mexico City and other places. So it's fairly easy to get somewhere else. But yeah, often a flight to Mexico won't be much more than a flight across the U.S. So it's not that expensive to get here. It's not expensive to live. So it's an easy choice for a lot of people.
That's great. Now, you also, in addition to working, I mean, you've written tons of articles for online magazines. You've reported from over 5 continents. Now, you also now, I know, because I was familiar with your blog called Travel Writing 2.0, and that was the first time I actually knew about you. And I know that some of the articles on there are like top notch. So you actually help others develop their writing skills? Like, what is it? What does it entail, this?
Yeah, my Travel Writing 2.0 book, which is also in its second edition, is about really how to make money at this, you know, how to earn a living or at least make a part-time set of earnings for my side hustle. And so I'm not writing about the craft so much. I mean, I've won awards for my writing and I think I'm a decent writer, but that's not what that book is about or the blog. It's more about, you know, taking it seriously as a business, either as a freelancer or a podcaster or a blogger, whatever. What are the opportunities in this digital landscape to actually make some money at your craft? And so that's what I'm trying to help people with on there. And I have a course also that's called Travel Writing Overdrive for people that want to really get serious about it. And so I'm kind of trying to be the wise old man saying I've done everything. I've tried all the things that are out there just about it. I haven't done a podcast. I'll leave that to you. But all the writing things I've probably done it. I've kind of figured out what works and what doesn't. Also, what people waste their time on. I mean, there's a lot of things people waste their time on that don't really move the needle in terms of earnings. And so I'm trying to
tell people.
Yeah, that would be me. I mean, it's easy. You know, all these social media platforms are very addictive and they made them that way for a reason. You know, they want you to spend as much time on there as possible. But also, you know, there's other things you could be doing that maybe just aren't moving you forward that, we've all got the same number of hours, right? It just depends on how you spend them. And I like to enjoy life too. I mean, I get 8 hours of sleep a night. I have fun with my family. I take real vacations. So I'm not advocating to be a workaholic, just concentrate on what makes a difference.
Yeah. Now, you forgot to mention the other book called The World's Cheapest Destinations, right? Because you've got lots of things in the oven, you know, you've got this books, and I'm like reading about it going, geez, you know, this is great because this is what people need to know.
Yeah, I do strongly believe in multiple streams of income, and some business gurus will tell you to focus on one thing and put 100% of your effort into it. But
we know what can happen with that.
Yeah, right? What can happen if you're a person who writes about international travel and
yes,
that's all you
exactly.
Do.
Oh my God. You know, the landscape is just horrible right now to like watch, you know.
Yeah. So I think whether you're talking about investments or you're talking about your business, I think it's good to be diversified. So yeah, I've always had my hand in different things, but I actually started my Cheapest Destinations blog back in 2003. So I was one of the pioneers.
Wow.
And I actually just started the blog because I put out this book called The World's Cheapest Destinations. And that was the very first edition. And it was ugly and riddled with typos and everything else. But some people bought it. So I figured I was onto something. So I started the blog just to help publicize the book, you know, to help people
find me.
So like if journalists put, you know, cheapest places to travel in Google, they would end up finding me and do an interview. So that's why I started it. But then it became a business on its own eventually. And but yeah, it's funny. So these two books are kind of related in the sense that when I first started that blog, all I was talking about was cheap travel and bargains and, you know, how to find the best deals and where to go and travel well for less. And I wrote a lot about round the world travel when I started. But then, you know, that was before we started getting thousands of people bopping around the world and blogging about their travels and starting their Instagram feed and everything else. So I've shifted to talking more about the living abroad aspect in the last few years, just because it's not as competitive. And also during this pandemic, it has made a lot more sense because people aren't doing round the world trips right now, but they are thinking about where they're going to move later. So
yeah, exactly.
You know, we have to pivot when situations change.
What do you see? Like, if you had to predict for somebody who's been in the industry for such a long time, what do you predict will happen to the travel landscape as far as, you know, not just digital nomads, but people wanting to move? Do you think we're anywhere close this year, next year? Like, what is your prediction?
Yeah, well, first of all, some of the industry changes we've seen have been a long time coming. It was just kind of a slow moving train that sped up in the past year. I'm talking
full speed ahead.
Yeah. I mean, I'm talking about the decline in print magazines, first of all. I mean, we could all see that coming for ages. It's just it accelerated this past year. And one thing that most people didn't see coming was a lot of these custom publications went out of business or they suspended. And I'm talking about airline magazines, cruise magazines, hotel magazines, things like that. A lot of those went under because, you know, there wasn't such a need for them. And I don't know if they're going to come back. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. But, you know, that's going to be a tough thing for the next few years to be a freelance writer trying to write for magazines. There's just not going to be many outlets. And those that are out there aren't taking as many articles about international travel because nobody can travel.
Yeah, exactly.
To this place. What we also saw coming for a long time was a saturation in the number of travel bloggers. And although I hate the word travel influencers, you know, people that are just
you don't like my hat. Here's my big hat covering up, like, you know, Piazza Navona. Here's my big hat covering up.
And so people, there's some account that posts, you know, Instagram pictures that are similar, you know, like somebody in a canoe on Lake Moraine in Canada, you know, it's like there's hundreds of them that are so similar. And it's so funny. Yeah, they've all got the hat on and they're posing looking back. But anyway, I think there's been a shakeout there and there will continue to be a shakeout. And so the people that really have something to say and that have a specific audience in mind are going to do well. And I think a lot of those generalists are kind of going to fall by the wayside. But you are really asking about travel itself, I think. And I think it's hard for any of us to know, but hopefully as more people get vaccinated, we'll start seeing in the second half of this year and into 2022 that people will start gradually going back to, you know, the bigger world out there instead of just doing road trips on their home turf. That's been the trend for the last year or so, which isn't a bad thing. I mean, it's nice for people to explore their own backyard and, you know, be able to see more. But it's been tough on the tourism industry. It's been tough for hotel owners and, you know, tour companies have just been decimated. I mean, if you're a tour guide, it's been a tough time to, you know, you got to find something else to do. And I really worry about some of these ecotourism initiatives, you know, the big promise in places in Africa and South America and other spots has been that, oh, well, if you protect these animals instead of poaching them, you can make money through tourism instead. But then when the tourists don't show up, then what happens? And so I'm a little worried about that and, you know, rainforest protection and things like that. Those aspects of travel, they really need to get people back in there or it's going to be devastating in the long term.
It's kind of, you know, it's like there are two sides of the coin. You sort of feel bad because all those places, especially Spain, is suffering right now because there's no tourism. And, you know, it's just unreal. The hotels are closed and it's just horrible. But, you know, you think back to like last year when everybody was like, tourists go home and all that stuff.
Over
and,
tourism.
You know, it's almost like, it's almost like, be careful what you wish for because, you know, now they've got it. And now it's like, how do we fix it? Is there a medium, a middle point to anything? I mean, nobody knows at this point. And we just hope, like you say, that it comes back in some way.
I imagine if you're a regular run-of-the-mill resident of Venice, you're pretty happy right now.
Yes.
You know, you finally got your city back.
Exactly.
But if you're somebody who bought 10 Airbnb apartments to rent out, you're not so happy.
No, you're not. No, you're not. You're actually crying now and trying to get rid of it. Even like here, you know, they changed the rules of Airbnb. Now it has to be just first floor only, and every apartment on that floor has to be an Airbnb too. So a lot of people that bought the apartment were suddenly screwed because the neighbor is like, no, this is my house. I'm not doing it. So, you know, a friend of mine was like, I looked out of my apartment and there's somebody, the police were there kicking somebody out. And they said, it's no longer an Airbnb because the neighbor wasn't Airbnb and called, you know, the cops on them. And so they were screwed. And it's just like things like this are happening all over the place. And it's just funny to see. But, you know, this is what we asked for, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely pluses and minuses. I mean, the air's gotten cleaner and less garbage in some of these places. And but yeah, it's a lot of lost jobs, and some of those might never come back.
Yeah, I know. Well, let me end the conversation, which has been great because I learned a lot, and I hope everybody listening, you know, and I'll have on the website, of course, I have all your information, you know, the books, the websites where they can get in touch with you. Anybody who's thinking about this, who needs to know how to make a living while on the road or make some money from this, they can find out how to contact you. So I have all that information on the blog post on Next Bite of Life that goes with this. But I wanted to ask you, living in Mexico, you know, for 10 years off and on, do you think this is like the final expat destination for you? Or are you open to not just, you know, not this being the base? Like, are you open to any other countries that you thought in the back of your head, maybe this one would be another place to have my base?
Well, I think this will, I think we'll hold on to this house. Maybe we'll leave it to my daughter. I don't know.
Nice.
Eventually, we're all on a pedestrian street that's up like 40 some steps to get to. So maybe maybe when we're ancient and hobbling around, we won't be able to go anymore.
You have to get one of those people movers, you know?
Yeah.
Or those seats that, you know, go up the side, you know?
So, we might have to move somewhere flatter someday, but
still in Mexico.
I don't know. I mean, like I said, we'll definitely go try some other places out for 2 or 3 months. I mean, I could see there's lots of places in the world I could see us hanging out for a good while, including your old home of Malta or Greece or somewhere like that.
Cool.
And we're going to go back to Southeast Asia in the fall if travel is, you know, open again, and spend a little time there for a couple months on end. And there's places in South America I really like too that I could see myself living. We actually thought about moving to Argentina at one point in time till we realized, like Spain, nobody goes out to eat before like 11 at night. And
yeah.
there's some other weird idiosyncrasies that I think I would have a hard time getting used to. But what really why we decided not to was just the distance and the flight problems.
Yeah.
But I could definitely see myself going there for 3 months or 6 months and, you know, maybe not
eating
becoming
steak
a
every
permanent
night.
Resident. Yeah. And that area around, you know, Bariloche and further south in Patagonia is just gorgeous. I mean, it's like Switzerland or Western Canada, you know, gorgeous lakes and snow-capped mountains and all that.
Nice. Well, that sounds wonderful. Now, I lied. I said that was my last question, but I have... I have a last question, you know, and this is sort of like advice. What advice would you have for somebody who's thinking about writing or moving to another country, especially? What would you give them as like any sort of wise advice you could give them?
Yeah, well, whether it's writing or something else, it's much, much easier these days to work remotely and, you know, still keep working than it was 10 years ago. And this pandemic has actually accelerated that. That's another one of those trends that we saw coming, and this kind of sped everything up. I mean, there are lots of companies that were operating completely remotely before this, but now a lot of the big boys, as we say, have started catching on to this fact that it can work just as well. I mean, as long as you have self-motivated people working for you, there's nothing wrong with them working in their house and doing some Zoom calls now and then. So, you know, look into that. If your passion's writing, then great. There's plenty of ways to earn a living doing that, or at least, you know, some kind of side hustle. But there's lots of other things that can be done remotely. So look at your skill set and what you can offer. And a lot of jobs that used to require you to show up at an office don't anymore. So if it's any kind of thing that can be done on a computer, it can probably be done wherever you want to live in the world. And whether that's working for a company or running your own business or working as a freelancer, there's lots of opportunities out there. So take a long walk, you know, get out a sketch pad, start putting some ideas on paper, whatever. But, you know, even if you work in some physical job now, there's probably something else you could be doing that you could do remotely.
That's great. Now, Tim, please remind us all before we leave your website and any other websites you want to drop on us.
Well, if you're looking at moving abroad, I've got lots and lots of free information on my blog that's called thecheapestdestinationsblog.com. No the in there, cheapestdestinationsblog.com. Or you can always search my name, Tim Leffel, L-E-F-F-E-L. There's not many people with that name, so I'm pretty easy to find.
Yes, and, he is.
what I've written. My portfolio site out there is just my name, and it links to everything else.
Yeah, so if you've got like about a half a day, you can read up on like all the stuff that he's actually done and the awards and the magazines and all that stuff. So you'll find
I do
out.
Want to point out I've got two really good virtual assistants that help me out. So people look at my output and go, God, when do you ever sleep? But I do have some help, and I would strongly advise that if you start to feel overwhelmed, you can find somebody to offload some things to.
That's great. Well, Tim, thank you so much for joining me today. This was really fun. And I was so glad to like hook up with you and finally get you to sit down for an interview with me. I hope everybody listening to this checks out his website. It's really chock full of great advice. And if you check out the book, you won't be disappointed. That's all I have to say. So if you're thinking about this, definitely check out the resources that he's got for you. And on that note, we'll leave it at that. Thank you so much for joining me, everyone. And don't forget to subscribe. Bye. Bye.
Bye. Thanks for having me on.